You're listening to Freethinker Radio on 90.1 KPFT Houston, your home for uncensored news and underground music since 2011.
And Derek's not here. Hello, everyone.
There's Derek. There's Derek. Radio. All right, 90.1 FM, KPFT in the 5 o'clock hour. Glad y'all are listening. We got a good show of news and music, like we've been bringing it for 10 years. We're also live streaming on a number of platforms. Derek.
Yeah, we are live right now on Odyssey, on Rockfin, on DLive, on Facebook, and of course on 90.1 KPFT Houston, where we do this every week. I just want to mention, for those who have missed us or maybe heard us the last couple weeks, it's been a little disjointed because the three of us have all been really busy. I've been touring Mexico. Now I'm back home at my home here in Mexico. So we actually got the three of us here, and it's really cool. Last week I was alone. I think the week before that it was maybe me and Micah. The week before that it might have been me and Johnny. It's been all over the place, and we're happy to be back here, though. So for the next 45, 50 minutes, we're going to be bringing you uncensored news, underground music, things you won't hear on other Houston radio stations, or maybe even on other places on the internet. So how you guys doing?
Oh, pretty good, man. Pretty good. Just been playing lots of shows, enjoying the Houston music scene a lot. Everyone's been getting along, no drama, and, you know, lots of good music, happy things happening. I mean, the world is, you know, still feel like that meme of the dog with his house on fire where he's saying this is fine, you know. But other than that, I'm doing pretty well. How about you, Micah?
Doing pretty good. I feel the same way. There's been a lot of positivity, although there's some extremely, you know, frightening things that we've been talking about, as always. But on the community level, out seeing people on the street, going to shows, you know, going to art events, going to markets, people have just been open, friendly. I've just seen a lot of positivity lately. So I hope that continues, seeing an outgrowth of people doing their own thing. And that's really positive. And I think more people started with, you know, just seeing what's going on out in the world. And sometimes you just got to, I don't know, it's difficult with this show, because with this show and just once you start paying attention to what's going on in the world, it gets difficult. But honestly, how much in your life are some of those things? I mean, in the long run, in lots of ways, right? But in the short term, it's hard to say, you know. I mean, obviously COVID got all up in everyone's life as much as it could. But I just don't think you can – what do you think about it? I mean, it's difficult sometimes to be aware of things that are going on, yet still enjoy the blessings of a day, the blessings of friendship, some good music, et cetera. I think that's important. I feel like the feed and all this stuff they want to get you emotionally vested in just detracts from your own productivity, your own creativity. And rarely do I ever hear anything in the lamestream feed that is about, you know, something good happening, something better, something to empower me from listening and learning. It's mostly about be afraid, be worried, be scared, you know, protect yourself, protect your loved ones. So I don't know. I don't see, you know, how paying attention to that really advances freedom that much, except to be aware of what some real anti-freedom people are doing.
Yeah, you know, Micah, what you were saying there kind of reminds me a little bit of, just for those who listened to KPFT last week or caught the episode of Freethinker Radio, as I mentioned, I was alone, and I spent probably 15 minutes ranting about a similar thing, but in relation to the latest celebrity drama. We won't even mention what I'm referring to, but just the latest celebrity drama they want anybody to pay attention to, right? And I was just kind of spending some time just asking the listener, like you were saying just a moment ago, like how much of that really does affect your life on a daily basis. And people get into, well, we have to debate these different minutia of somebody else's life, and what were this person wearing, and who are they dating, and all this stuff that really is just, I don't know, everybody has their freedom to choose however they want, what they want to spend their time doing with in their life. But it seems like there's probably more important things to talk about. So unless you guys have got any other shows or anything y'all want to promote, y'all ready to get into the news? Is there anything y'all want to plug?
I'll go ahead and shout out the Epicurean Market over on Heights Boulevard this Saturday morning. It starts off, I guess, around 8 and goes till noon. There'll be all kinds of vendors, something to get out, walk, and enjoy. So that's going on. I guess it's block 1245 Heights Boulevard.
I don't have anything this week. I totally don't know. I'm going to San Antonio this week and see Bad Cop, Bad Cop.
Nice. Enjoy yourself, man. Yeah, I do know that I'll just mention that there are some Houston events going on with the Houston Freedom Cell. I can't think of them off the top of my head, but I know that for anybody who's interested in that, if you use the Telegram app, that's one place to plug in. You can search Houston Freedom Cell. And they send out like a monthly newsletter of all the different things they have coming up every month, different workshops, skill shares, actions, whatever. I know they have another place besides Telegram, and check it out. But for those who use Telegram, check out Houston Freedom Cell if you're in Houston and looking to get plugged in. Even if you're listening from elsewhere, you're not in Houston, you can find probably a group in your area on Telegram or at freedomcells.org if you're looking to get plugged in with some people. But let's go ahead and let's jump into it. I know we're going to play some new music tonight, and I also am going to play a short clip later on. I've got something I'm going to want to share with the audience later. So before we get to that, let's talk about some local corruption. As usual, Houston has no shortage of this corruption, or let's just say alleged corruption at the moment, right? Since nobody has been officially charged with any crime at the moment in this next story we're going to get into. But there are some questions being asked. And what I'm talking about is local, I guess you could call her a hero to some. She's one of the youngest elected commissioners and I think politicians in general in the Houston area in Harris County. I'm talking about Harris County Judge Lena Hidalgo. According to this story, which was back in March, we're going to start with this one and kind of get up to where things are more recently. Houston Public Media reported unsealed warrants detail communication between Hidalgo staffers and a vendor over $11 million contract. So I did some research into what exactly is this all about. And basically, I mean, it sounds like some classic corruption, guys, that we've seen in different areas. There's a vendor, and if you look up what are their name, the vendor that eventually got this $11 million contract, Elevate Strategies. You can go look up like on the different business sites where you can see people's LLC and their business filings, and you can see how many employees they have and all that kind of stuff. You look up Elevate Strategies, they literally have, I think, two employees in total. So this company that is fairly new, came out of nowhere, only two employees, gets an $11 million contract from Hidalgo's office in the last year or so to do COVID outreach. And basically these new documents, which have been now getting out into the public and we're seeing text messages and emails, they show that people from her office were communicating directly with this vendor, and specifically this woman, let me see if I can find her name, Felicity Pereira, who is also, works with Democratic Party and kind of has a whole interesting history. She's like the only person involved in this company, the sole owner. They show text showing that members of Hidalgo staff communicating with her. And essentially, it seems like they coordinated to help her get this bid. You know, so without pursuing any other bids from other vendors, this $11 million contract for COVID outreach, supposedly, these emails and these exchanges show that there was some form of coordination. And so now the Texas Rangers are investigating the what other department? There's another department investigating. So that was first reported back in March 18th. That's kind of the first step. And then I got the second story more recently this next one's from around the same time. And it was saying that search warrant on Harris County contract details alleged advantages. And it just goes through more of what I just talked about there. They got 50 pages of court documents detailing allegations in what appears to be a months long effort by Harris County leaders to award a nearly $11 million contract to a particular vendor. So again, this is like not really, really groundbreaking and surprising. It's an example of local corruption, and these things do happen. But I know Lena Hidalgo has tried to maintain a certain image in the city of Houston. And she also is still claiming that there's no real evidence for wrongdoing. And let me show you this most recent one. She's saying, I specifically didn't take any donations from vendors when I was running for office. And she's denying, she's saying it's all misunderstanding. This one was reported by the Chronicle just in the last couple of days. Harris County Judge Lena Hidalgo. Okay, this is separate, actually, and we get to that in just a moment. But yeah, so what do you guys think about that? Have you heard about that? I just found out about it the other day.
I was thinking a bit about it that they've been talking about it. I heard some other people talking about it, couple of people. It's really hard to award an $11 million contract for COVID, relief if people aren't, COVIDified, if they're not all in fear of COVID. So I think like the political agenda and this kind of, you got to look at it a little bit, is there influence here? Like maybe Lena Hidalgo could have just actually believed COVID was that bad, or she could have been motivated whether some of this money came, whether they were a donor or this was a friend or what it was. And even it doesn't have to be Lena. It could be anyone in any sort of circumstance, right? Any politician. So I don't know. I think it's kind of, it brings up the questions of, you know, is art imitating life here? Is policy imitating, you know, where the money's going? I don't know, but I think that could be something that's alarming if you think about it, you know, because we see the money being thrown at all these different causes, Ukraine, et cetera, but how much are the causes just being thrown at you so you can accept it when the money's thrown, you know? And it's only when, just like with the kick in raids, it's only, you know, when something goes awry that people start looking. Like, I'm like trying to look at the universal here, like whether it's Lena Hidalgo or some other judge in some other city or some other politician, just when the money is going somewhere and the whole media campaign is to get you invested, emotionally vested in the issue on one side or the other, like how much easier is it for them to just keep signing documents that spend 11 million, you know, 100 million, 600 million, and then it's only when one of them gets questioned do we even slow down enough, even here as people, to wonder about whether there's an influence on policy.
Yeah, Mike, I think you pretty much covered it. I don't know. She was one of the front runners of like all the COVID policies with masks and all that kind of stuff. So I know that if she was misusing $11 million, that her supporters would be extremely upset that that money wasn't being spent elsewhere. So I don't know. That's all I want to add.
Yeah, I think to me, it's just, like I said, not the biggest surprising or groundbreaking story, and we'll continue to cover it here to see where it leads. And if she does actually, you know, if it's shown that she had some knowledge, at the very least, based on these documents, which have been now viewed by all the papers and all the outlets in Houston, that it shows at least people in her office knew this woman, directly communicated with her, and did what they could to steer this contract directly to her without giving any other companies an option to. And again, this company has two employees, never had any other contracts, pretty much brand new, and just for this thing, and now they're getting an $11 million contract. So it's kind of weird stuff going on. But let's mention Hidalgo one more time. In this regard, this is something I'm a little more interested in, actually, because I wish that there was some information related to this when it comes to the mayor of Houston. So I'll just add this last one before we move on here, that this is her response. Her aides say that, you know, again, it's a misunderstanding. Her lawyers are now claiming like all the courts or the documents will prove that she's innocent. So I just want to make sure we put that on the record. She is denying the cases, of course. But the next story is dealing with these emergency powers. You guys remember we talked about this when COVID first began. Mayor of Houston, Sylvester Turner, was granted indefinite emergency powers by city council with only one member of the city council voting against it and saying, hey, maybe this isn't something we want to just allow to happen. Well, on the county level, Hidalgo is also given similar powers. And now just a couple of days is being reported. Harris County Judge Lena Hidalgo has brought emergency powers under state disaster declaration. Commissioner Cagle wants that to end. So that's another commissioner on the Harris County Commissioner's Court. Precinct 4 Commissioner Jack Cagle wants to take a red pen to the judge's county judge's emergency powers. The proposal on the Commissioner's Court Tuesday's agenda would strip Hidalgo of her authority she was granted on March 16, 2020. Think about that. So it's been 2 years now to have emergency powers as long as Governor Greg Abbott had them under the state's disaster declaration related to the pandemic. Cagle said on March 22nd, they are under a different set of rules when asked about the parameters of the emergency powers. He says, we are here every 2 weeks and we can be here in 72 hours. So for more than 2 years, Hidalgo and other leaders around the state have had extraordinary ability because of the alleged public health risks of the pandemic to close. They can close and open public businesses, approve contracts and establish emergency shelters, testing sites and vaccine distribution locations. And obviously they can, you know, push for mask mandates and things of that sort. So, yeah, it goes in further into the controversy, but basically, this is just a couple days ago, so this might have been updated this week. We could maybe see in just a moment. I'll see if I can find the update. But what do you guys think about this? Again, I don't see any discussion about Mayor Turner and his indefinite emergency powers. They're just talking about her at the moment. So I'm not sure, you know, what that's about or why, you know, he's not being discussed. But what do you think about that in general, Micah, 2 years later?
I don't know. I start to wonder about if they all went to the Trudeau school over there with the World Economic Forum, you know, future leaders, you know, emergency powers. I thought those emergency powers are supposed to protect us, you know, not just them. But yeah, come on, Harris County, look at how we're living. Do we think this woman still needs to have emergency powers? And yeah, that shows you if we don't question it, things don't happen. You know, they'll sit there with emergency powers for years and years and years until those are regular powers. That's what I think. But, you know, it's just my 2 cents.
Let me just show you this real quick. I was like, I got the update. There it is. They failed to remove her powers.
If you're a 5G champion, you get that extra extended emergency power. You know, it's kind of like having a, you know, exponent at the end.
I don't know if you guys could see this link. I'm going to reload it right now, but it just said that the attempt to remove her emergency powers on this Tuesday has failed. So she still has her emergency powers 2 years and on now.
Yeah, it's dangerous out there. I don't know if y'all live in the same world.
That's what I'm saying. Like, even the mainstream is saying that there's like no risk of COVID, whatever your thoughts were over the last 2 years. At the moment, they're admitting like there's nothing to really be worried about. You know, maybe they're saying, oh, it's spreading in China or whatever. But so I don't know. I'm trying to get to this article to see if there's any justification, if there's a statement or on why the commissioner members voted the way they did, ultimately leaving Lena Hidalgo with emergency powers. And I'm guessing Sylvester Turner, the mayor of Houston, fourth largest city in the country, with emergency powers 2 years on now. And as you said, Micah, those emergency powers often turn to permanent powers. So
what are some of these emergency powers? You know any of them?
Well, I just listed off some a couple of moments ago. It said things like shutting or like forcing businesses, like setting the time they can open and close.
That doesn't sound like contracts, it protects us.
Doing contracts like the one they're under fire for, creating vaccine distribution centers, creating testing centers, signing contracts. So obviously using taxpayer funds for all kinds of things like, oh, there's an emergency. So that, because think about that, without that emergency declaration, she might not have had the authority to do that $11 million contract for COVID, because without the disaster sort of as the excuse, then she can't just go start giving out $11 million.
It sounds like that's the excuse they use to shut down, you know, working class businesses and such, you know. I'm surprised, you know, that it stuck around. You never know. There might be another chance to shut them down. I don't know. I don't see how these people are champions of the people when, you know, little businesses and such, you know, are sitting there at their fingertips, you know, if they don't. That's why how they get all the businesses to put the signs up when they feel like it and et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah.
So let's see. Let me just read this real quick. So this is what it says. Keep the attempt to make her to strip her of her power fails. She still has her emergency powers. The proposal by Jack Cagle failed on a 3-2 vote with 3 Democratic members voting against it. So it might have been like, you know, a political thing. She isn't in the part of the Democratic Party. 3 Democrats vote against the measure and they allow her to keep her emergency powers. And they said that the reason, you know, or Cagle, the reason he was doing this, he said, because the major improvement in pandemic realities and the court's ability to frequently and quickly convene. So he's saying like, there's no reason to have this. Precinct Commissioner Rodney Ellis said it was ridiculous. And he said, the mayor still has emergency powers. The county judge around us would still have emergency powers. So he was, you know, for it. County Judge Ellis, Rodney Ellis, remember that, voting to keep this in control. And of course, Adrian Garcia, former sheriff, right? Michael, he was sheriff. He's now a commissioner. He voted in favor of this as well, of allowing her to keep her powers. So that's where it continues. And what this article says that since March 2020, Hidalgo and every county judge in Texas, along with all the mayors, have had extraordinary ability because of the alleged public health risks of the pandemic to close and open public spaces, approve contracts and establish emergency shelters, establish testing sites and vaccine distribution centers. And on and on. Obviously, mask mandates and things of that sort, too. So
they just identify themselves with these things. So if you really wanted to work against them in many different ways, you could. Or if you found someone of any decency running against them that you could be for. But I think it's amazing how blatant they are. Like they don't hear, even on the local level, they're not surprised that people aren't just like going there with a pitchfork because they just gave someone the power to shut down private businesses. You know, I mean, I don't see why people aren't bothered by that more.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. Well, I think we've probably spent enough time on that. Johnny, you want to add anything to this? I mean, just the idea. Do you think, for example, among most of our friends, mutual friends and friends we have on our own, Do you think people are even aware of this, that the mayor and the county judge, if they even know who she is, the commissioner, that she has these emergency powers 2 years on?
I think that they're aware, but I think it's kind of like that type of awareness where, you know, in the moment they were rah-rah, like that's necessary, and then kind of just forgot that it's still going on, you know? I mean, that's what always happens, doesn't it? You know, just give us this thing. It's going to be temporary. It's not like we heard this.
Pretty much. Pretty much. I think you hit it spot on, you know. Give us this thing. It'll be temporary. But, you know, we still have the Patriot Act. We still have these various other things. They still haven't learned, you know, about the STEMIs and all that. So, anyway.
Well, let's go ahead and jump forward, Micah, before we get to some new music. I'm going to jump to your story. You had one about the Texas, what was it, Texas family. There's some allegations of abuse, unfortunately. Again, I got that one ready to go. Texas family demanding answers from DFPS over allegations of abuse. I'm not sure what the DFPS is.
I think it's a Dallas-Fort Worth Police Service. Okay. Yeah, just I'll run it from here. My crypt pad's gone insane. But
it's actually the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services. Can you see the article? I'll blow it up a little bit if you can see it on the screen.
Well, you know, the interesting thing here is that it happened in one county. They can't basically, what is it called? Like in court, they can't accuse themselves. They can't, that county cannot, you know, put themselves on trial. So the county next to them is the one looking at it. The teacher in the incident was terminated. But they say there's no legal case for the family. There is video that is there in the article that basically it doesn't explain why in the article, but a teacher more or less is simply restraining a student. But it gets, I don't know if you would want some random teacher sitting on your kid, some random teacher holding your kid down for 4 minutes straight. I'm not sure. I think it's one of those things that we got to dig deeper to know what's going on. But I did think it was interesting, you know, to remind people that the county couldn't sue themselves, basically. They couldn't accuse themselves. Otherwise, you know, it'd be like the county of Grimes, the county of Grimes against the county of Grimes, you know. So if they had to go to the next county over to even have it looked at criminally. But, yeah, there's video. Like I said, they're sitting there holding this kid down, probably, like it says right there, a seven-year-old. I don't know. Seven's awful young, and there's the video, and there's no real sound in it, but you can see the person basically more or less sitting on a kid over there, and this sort of behavior goes on. It's like they hold the kid this way, they hold the kid that way, they hold the kid in all these strange ways, and who knows what's happening, but it doesn't seem right, and who's to know where that boundary is? I mean, obviously we know what's extremely too far, but what's going on here? I don't see how that kid's causing a problem to anyone. It shows a teacher in one side of the room move over to a kid, put them down on the ground, and basically hold them there. And more or less, this goes on for 4 minutes. I don't, you know, we don't too much need to go too far with it. But, you know, it's not as shocking as some of the stories we've covered in the past. But the other thing to remember is the schools are often, you know, an individual's first contact with the state. Here's a seven-year-old learning, you know, all about authority, you know. So I don't know. You know, I don't know what to think about it. If y'all haven't seen it, it might be something to check out. I do think, like I said, you know, everybody wants to send their kids to school because they're told to send your kid to school. Separate from the horrible sexual abuse and the horrible physical violence that they've suffered. We've talked about that up to, including death. Here's a seven-year-old. Just, I don't understand why a grown adult has to basically handle a seven-year-old in this fashion for 4+ minutes. I don't know. What do you guys think? It's just another one of those brief things. Here's a young spirit's introduction to authority and, you know, the institution paid for by everyone. And, you know, I just don't know how many people don't know what's going on with their babies in the schools on a regular basis. I think these videos and the stories we bring up so that people might ask those questions more, might get more involved in that local authority right there in your kid's face every day.
Yeah, absolutely, Mike. I'm glad you. I do think, even though, again, these aren't like the biggest stories, people hear this and like, okay, how does this relate to the bigger picture, so to speak? They're still important to take note that these kind of things do happen. Like you said, the public school system are often the kids' first experiencing, you know, direct connection to authoritarianism in the form of the state. I mean, now I remember even. I remember being a kid in school and like the cops show up sometimes, like if they're there to arrest a really bad kid, and I've been that kid once or twice. And the whole thing is just designed to make you feel like you're in trouble. Like if you disobey, they search your lockers. I remember the first time as well in school when that was starting to happen, probably when I was in high school after 9/11, and myself and some other friends trying to make a big deal about it and say like, hey, you can't go through our lockers. We have rights. And they sort of laughed and were like, as soon as you walk through those doors, we own you. You don't have rights while on campus. And just that realization for me as a kid was just like, whoa, what the heck? They're just straight up with it. So I think you're right that it is often the first experience people have with authoritarianism. And in this case, like, it's crazy. It's a 7-year-old kid. What is this insane person thinking? And I just put the question to the audience. Anybody who wants to share or contact us on our website and send us your answer. Do you believe children are safe from public school? What do you think, Johnny?
Hit or miss. I mean, they're... Are you really safe anywhere? I don't know. Could be not. But I definitely think that lady was using some kind of weird, unnecessary technique to subdue the child. I mean, I don't know what situation the kid was yelling at you or wanted to leave the room for some reason. I don't know. It reminds me of how I would have handled something when I was babysitting my younger siblings when I was maybe like 13. Yeah. You see examples of teachers doing that kind of stuff all the time. I mean, they're just people, you know, there's some good teachers who can inspire kids and help them grow and learn. And then there's some teachers who, you know, are, you know, just skating by in life or have short tempers or, you know, whatever other negative human conditions there are, you know, and a lot of times they're, you know, generally not paid well enough to care that much. So.
No doubt. Maybe we shouldn't care so much about sending kids to public school. That's about what I'd say. I mean, that's about what I see when I see this stuff. And even
if I was super busy, I mean,
what Johnny's saying,
I might throw the kids in there.
Yeah.
So they can read, basically. And then you're like, good.
Yeah, what Johnny's saying, even with it being true that teachers don't get paid very much and, you know, there's a lot of stress and they are just human. And I think everyone does need to remember that. But at the same time, you know, they are, you know, an arm of the state right there, you know, getting paid by the state. And, you know, for people that look at for all their solutions from on high, look at what this one's doing for the first 18 years of maybe the most formative years of a individual's life, putting them through countless of different adults with God knows how many different neuroses and psychosis, you know, before they even get to the point of being able to stand on their own. And then they're typically, you know, we hear about the prison to, you know, school to prison pipeline. There's the whole school to the military pipeline and that. So I don't know what the solution is, but I
sucks don't away your individuality.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, hey, let's go ahead. You know, what you made me think of, and this is a good segue to the music. Micah, you can introduce this song. I just wanted to share this because what Johnny said there to me was probably the most important point that in my experience, especially as somebody who had a lot of trouble in the school system, not when it came to grades, I was excelling and those kinds of things, but I would conflict with the teachers and the way they tried to teach me and the boxes they tried to keep me in and all these things that looking back, I'm like, wow, they were trying to like make me learn this one specific way and be this certain way. And sort of intuitively, like on a deeper level, I think I realized it was, you know, it didn't work and it wasn't meant for me. And so I just got home from tour and literally last night at our event, we had these two young Mexican rappers that Miriam and I met just out on the streets. And I heard him like this guy rapping in the street and he was rapping in Spanish about how he's like 17 years old, how the school system is the death of the artist. And that was like what his chorus was about, like, you know, the school system's the death of the artist. It's the death of the artist and how, you know, they try to put him in a box and suffocate his creativity. So, yeah, I think that's what it does. But, yeah, that's a perfect segue. Let's go right into the song. Micah, tell us about this new music we're hearing.
This is a fresh release from Ganesha called Imaginary Person. They just did the release show. It was tremendous. Saw Johnny's band, El Jumbotron, there as well. So, yeah, Imaginary Person by Ganesha. Sounds good. we're back. All right, 90.1 FM.
Yeah, that was cool. That was my first time hearing that.
I think it's going to be really? A lot of people's first time hearing that.
Yeah. Where can they hear
that?
That's
like my favorite song live.
I know they can go and get it over at Apple or Amazon Music, but I'm pretty sure you can hear it on Spotify and YouTube, pretty much anywhere music streams.
Cool. Ganesha, imaginary person, right?
Yep, that's right. And, you know, Ganesha's right. been coming on this show for a while, and you know, I do want to remind people that featuring local and underground music has always been an aspect of this show for over a decade now, and we're excited for Ganesha's new music. We were excited for them to come on to our show at some of the very first studios we were at over at Local Live back in the day, and to come in on to KPFT Studios. But, yeah, if you've got music to share, reach out to one of us, and we're going to dig it and get it on. Of course, you know, it's got to be FCC compliant and all that. If you need to email, you can send it to music@visionarynoise.com. But yeah.
All right. Perfect. Let's get your music on the radio. We'll share it. Micah, let's go ahead and start with this next little batch of stories. We each got something to say related to COVID. So let's start with you, Micah. You're starting with some mask story, and I'm going to pick it up after you.
No doubt. I thought this was interesting. It turns out that 21 states sued the CDC Tuesday, and basically other agencies as well, to end the country's much debated mask mandate on public transportation. You know, you've probably seen it on, you can't ride the metro unless you mask up. You see these people sitting on the side of the road waiting to ride the metro, masks, putting the masks on, etc. The suit filed
nobody really does it
in U.S. District Court for the Middle District of Florida argued that the federal mandate exceeds the CDC's authority and interferes with state laws banning forced masking. I think that's an important point, though. You know, whether people do it or not, this is something we've been talking about for, 2 years here. You know, where's the limit to this, you know, alphabet soup's authority? Florida has led the nation in standing up to misguided federal government policies and fighting back against heavy-handed mandates that have no scientific backing, they say. If politicians and celebrities can attend Super Bowl unmasked, then every U.S. citizen should have the right to fly unmasked. It is well past the time to get rid of this unnecessary mandate and get back to normal life. I might not agree with them on everything else, but, you know, that sounds pretty straightforward. If you want to wear a mask, wear a mask. Goodness, you know. And but to have, you know, the CDC, an unelected body, thrust that, you know, you don't give up, you know, if you don't want to wear a mask, all of a sudden you have to give up your right to travel, you know, because of what some, you know, CDC mandates. Turns out that the complaint names the CDC, the Department of Health and Human Services, Homeland Security, and the TSA. The TSA, long-standing favorite characters here on Freethinker Radio, as well as the heads of each agency, seeks to end the mandate on public transportation and establish a permanent injunction against its enforcement. Since the COVID-19 pandemic began, the CDC has made unprecedented assertion of power. The lawsuit states. But I think it's important to get this stuff out. CDC, of course, declined to comment. The TSA, the HHS, the DHS also did not really respond. Florida's joined by Alabama, Alaska, Arizona, Arkansas, Georgia, Idaho, Indiana, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, Ohio, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Utah, Virginia, and West Virginia. They say it's long past time to alleviate some of the pressure on travelers and those working in the travel industry. I'm sure that's got to be horrible. You know, you got a job and you got to go over there and tell people to put the mask on, and you got to wear a mask every day to a job.
Excuse me, sir. You weren't sipping your drink. I saw you.
Yeah. Yeah, really. I mean, that's just got to.
Please put it back on. That wasn't a sip. I know. You haven't sipped for like 2 minutes.
Yeah, you know, planes, trains, boats, buses. Transportation hubs inside the airports and at subway stations. I mean, so this is pretty prevalent for a lot of people, especially up in the Northeast.
I wonder what took them 2 years to sue.
Good question. They probably bought into it for a while, you know, but I get the question. I think it's a valid question. I would not think we should ever duck from asking it. But at the same time, once someone joins over and is trying to advance it, let's get that sort of thing where it is stated that exceeds their authority, at least.
Yeah, I'm not trying to like downplay the importance of a potential win in that arena.
It ties back, though, to what we were talking about earlier, these emergency powers that people just forget it. Like the CDC, like in normal circumstances, during a normal time, the CDC was like, you know, you have to wear this mask during all flights or on all federal transportation. I mean, I don't know if they could pull that off, but obviously in those times they were granted extra emergency powers. And was it the CDC who was the one who put the moratorium on rent? Or who did that? Was that Biden?
Was the CDC? Was through the CDC, and that was actually under Trump. That was they had the CDC. That was a whole other thing. And I think there were lawsuits about that. You remember that, Micah?
That's what I'm saying. Like, why are they as an act? They became landlords. Yeah, they became able to protect your rent somehow all of a sudden because there's a disease. Like, so now that because they're the disease fighting arm, now they can protect you from all these other things and all these other areas. I don't know. Obviously,
if they keep some of the extra powers, like we were saying earlier, but on the bigger scale, just like the way we've seen, you mentioned, Micah, the TSA being sued as well. That's one agency we saw in a similar disaster after 9/11 created, and then now their mission continues to expand. They went from being at the airport to now sometimes you see them on the freeways doing checkpoints. Sometimes you see them at the bus stations, the train stations, you know, because they're like, oh, well, we're transportation. That means anywhere, everywhere we want to be. So the mission.
Thank you guys for kicking them off the Houston buses.
Yeah, we're still the only city in the country to get rid of them from their transportation. Because otherwise, if that hadn't happened in 2012, everybody in Houston who rides a public transportation could be getting searched by random TSA agents or drug sniffing dogs or have their purses gone through and things like that.
Yeah, and it also would be using a lot of Houston Metro police time, meaning fares would go up, because that was another thing that they were hit on is who paid the overtime for all the Metro agents that had to walk them around and escort them and be there with them. So there's a lot of aspects to this, you know, these sort of things. There's many, many aspects to them. Not only is there the horrible incursion into civil liberties, but then there's the whole, you know, not being sound monetarily. I mean, this stuff is not good for a broke nation with runaway inflation and hardly any sort of creating product.
Yep. I'm going to go ahead and jump forward to the next story. We're just down to the last 18 minutes or so, and I know we all got some more things to share. This one is continuing the conversation that Micah just started on masks. He's talking about lawsuits related to masks and transportation. This next story is one I'm glad that I came across, and I'm hoping that everybody at KPFT hears this one and does the research and looks into it. This is being reported from The Independent in the UK. Children are less independent and struggling to communicate after pandemic, Ofsted reports. Ofsted's like this, they're the name of one of their government organizations. Some babies find facial expressions difficult to read after the widespread use of face masks. Let me say that again. Some babies find facial expressions difficult to read after widespread use of masks. According to this new report from Ofsted, which I'll pull up the real report itself in a moment so we can see it ourselves, says that according to this report, babies are learning to crawl and walk at a slower rate while school children are struggling to use devices that are not touchscreen after the pandemic. Using evidence from almost 300 inspections in nurseries, schools, colleges, the Education Watchdog has highlighted how almost 2 years of disruption to learning, social distancing, and lockdown restrictions has negatively impacted young people's communication and language development. Some inspectors reported that babies are struggling to respond to basic facial expressions, while others noticed a delay in speech and language in toddlers. They proposed that this could be a consequence of widespread use of masks during the pandemic. The report says, quote, children turning 2 years old have been surrounded by adults wearing masks for their whole lives and have therefore been unable to see lip movements or mouth shapes as regularly. And this is something people have been warning about since the beginning of this, that this was going to be a potential side effect. I'll pull up the actual report so we can just see that. But it pretty much, you know, it just repeats what I just shared there. Here's the website, Ofsted. I'm not sure what the abbreviation means, but this is the UK government website. The report published April 4th, 2022, called Education Recovery in Early Years Providers, Spring 2022. And then you can actually get even deeper. It was published in Frontiers in Virology. Oh, excuse me, wrong article. It was published on their website. You can download the PDF and you can go there. And you can, if you want to just do a keyword search of masks, you can find the statements I just read if you want to actually see it in their own words. But they go into the other effects. It's not just about the masks. I do think the masks is a big thing because so many people, as we were just discussing, have been kind of adamant about it. while other doctors have been saying that they could be harmful in the ways we're seeing here, psychological development, language development, because of kids' inability to see facial expressions and people's smiles and mouths and learning in that way and the importance that that plays on the developing mind, but also the increased rates of suicides and all the different things. And I thought it was interesting that they mentioned kids are having trouble learning or using devices if they're not touchscreen because they've got them so engaged even more than pre-COVID in the digital world with the Zoom class and you know, getting them all on tablets and things of that sort. So yeah, pretty crazy stuff. And like I said, it's not like we haven't heard something like this before or seen it, but it hasn't really been discussed.
When you mentioned, because I mean, I obviously don't have any kids, so I didn't really think about it. But when you mentioned the fact that a child who was born 2 years ago had been like growing up entirely throughout like masks, that was kind of eye opening for me. That's crazy, because you know, I mean, true. Like we've been saying since the mask thing started. You know, what does a mother's smile do? Like, you know, like how does, you know, the shape of your mouth affect, like, you know, learning words and how to pronounce words? So, I mean, there's a lot of things that, you know, some people more focused on language would understand, but like, you know, I'm not surprised. I wish I was surprised, but I'm not surprised to hear that. And that does make me bummed out. We talked not that many weeks ago about how children, they've been one of the last groups of people to have their own masks removed as well. So it's just interesting. So you don't know like what that did for social development between them. Like, you know what I'm saying? Imagine passing notes in class or something silly like that, but you can't see if somebody's smiling or frowning as a reaction towards it. You know, it's subtle things like this, but like it in the long run, people don't really think about these things.
Yeah, man. You know, the reason I think about it is because I have six nieces and nephews, and the youngest two are two and under. And so they, in that situation, they literally, the youngest one especially, he hasn't seen, other than like my family and people who we see him without masks and stuff like that. But when he goes out in public, he's seeing lots of people masked up. And so it's definitely something I've thought a lot about, just like how that's going to affect long term. And now we're getting some data on that. Again, that's coming from the UK government. It's not coming from Freethinker Radio. You know, it is what it is. But what do you think about that, Micah?
I think it stands to reason. I'm not too surprised. Especially when you heard, like we did, and we talked about them, where people were talking about wear a mask in your house. Do you not remember some of those things? I mean, that was kind of crazy. People probably wearing masks in their house because of that. I hope it was a very small minority of people. But can you imagine that, having a child and not like, and wearing a mask between you and your child and you not already being sick or the child being sick? That's just, I can't see doing that as a parent. So I'd like to think that, you know, they still had mother smiles and all that, but I do think, you know, let's get beyond just the zero to twos, the two to fours, and think about how many varieties of expression there are in the human face and those muscles. You know, they talk about so many facial muscles, everything from, you know, a wince, just judging by the eyes alone, it's hard to tell the difference of some of them. So I think it does stand to reason that it would affect the communicative skills. And as Johnny pointed out, and I think it's an important point, it wouldn't just be, you know, from members of like their family and maybe, you know, their elders or whatever you want to say. It would also be amongst their peers, you know, their ability to communicate with one another. And I don't know. It seems like when you think about that and you couple it with what you're pointing out, Derek, about their increased dependence, for lack of a better word, on screens, you know, the meta's just around the corner.
Yeah. All right, guys, we got a few more minutes. Johnny, let's go ahead and jump into yours as we continue our catch up on some COVID related news. I know you got an important one from Children's Health Defense. You're muted.
Totally muted. Always doing that. Yeah, we have one from Children's Health Defense. It's just a press release that was shared out. It says here, the director of the Mayo Clinic's vaccine research group suffers from tinnitus following COVID vaccine. So he put out a press release because he, after his second injection, like, he started feeling the symptoms of tinnitus. It says Dr. Greg Pollan, director of Mayo Clinic's Vaccine Research Group, told reporters last week that he developed tinnitus, ringing in the ears, that can be debilitating shortly after receiving his second COVID vaccine. According to MedPage Today, Pollan believes there may be tens of thousands of people affected in the U.S. and potentially millions worldwide. He feels strongly that more research should be done to determine what caused these symptoms and what can be done to help people desperate for relief. Many parents of children who regress, so they kind of, I don't necessarily want to get totally into that, but they go into how children with autism have had problems with tinnitus, because essentially tinnitus is caused by swelling of the brain, which somehow creates that noise, and it can cause them to, like, you know, be slapping their ears and that kind of thing. But I had in here was, here it is. I wanted to skip ahead because obviously now that he's suffering from it, he feels like it's important to speak out against this, because even if he's one in however many, you know, that kind of thing can hit home for you. So I think it's important, especially if someone who's in the position that he is. But it says here, from mid-December 2020 through March 4th, 2022, the VAERS received 4,065 reports of myocarditis. Oh, sorry. That's the wrong one. That's for myocarditis. Here it is. I apologize. The U.S. government's vaccine adverse event reporting systems has received 22,138 reports of tinnitus following all vaccines combined since the system was established in 1990. So of that number, of the 22,138, there have been 19,630 reports of tinnitus following the COVID vaccine alone. So I don't have my calculator out, but that's a pretty high percentage.
Over 90%.
Wow.
Yeah, I'd say like 80 or 90 probably. It's truly wild. So.
Yeah, I'll just add the caveat there, because I know somebody will say it or somebody's thinking it, that VAERS isn't proven. And I just want to say that just real briefly.
Okay, yeah, VAERS is unverified.
They need to investigate it. You know, that's the whole point, right? Like, instead of ignoring it, investigate it.
He's calling for research and investigation into that. I mean, they say they don't really ever have the, you know, we have a lot of questions about why, you know, people don't look into the VAERS reports or why that's not confirmed, but that's for another day. I just wanted to mention one more thing he said here, which I thought was like kind of an interesting angle for people who are thinking about vaccine mandates and are thinking, you know, vaccines are kind of like a one-size-fits-all solution. So he says, in 2014, Dr. Poland and a team of researchers at the Mayo Clinic found that Somali Americans developed twice the antibody response to rubella from the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine compared to Caucasians. These findings underscore the importance of resisting a one-size-fits-all approach when it comes to the administration of vaccines, said Mr. Bono. While unfortunate, Dr. Pullen's adverse reaction to the COVID vaccine should wake up. Oh, sorry. His adverse reaction to the COVID vaccine should be a call for anyone considering the shot, and especially for children who are at virtually no risk of serious complications or COVID in the first place. So I thought those were some important points to make. And they go on to say that, like, obviously there's been tons of cases of myocarditis. Right here it says 4,000 reports, 2,000 from Pfizer, and that's a more serious heart condition. But it could be other smaller things that affect, you know, learning and all kinds of other stuff. And people who are speech impaired might not be able to exactly say what's going on.
Yeah, I wish we could get that last sentence you read there, Johnny, from that quote from Ms. Bono. Spray painted on the Be Someone thing in the middle of Houston, if we could fit it, that it says, especially for children who are at virtually no risk of serious complications or death from COVID in the first place. So I just want to reiterate that part.
I mean, that is the question. Problem with the blanket mandate. That's what people want to do. And can still hear me, but okay, cool. I don't know. What do you think, Micah?
I think it's important article. I'm glad you brought it for us. And like you said, I think his position will bring more attention to it. And, you know, often we technologically we get to where we can, and we have barely scratched whether we should. You know, the question how and can we seem to always precede should we. And it's like after the fact, we're running along doing the should and the moral and ethical work.
I got one more really quick story, guys, just to add to our COVID bunch here as we're ending the show today. Just in case people haven't heard, this is a write-up from a COVID-19 channel on Telegram. It says, is mainstream media coming for Eco Health Alliance and Dr. Fauci? In case you hadn't heard about this, maybe we'll do a deeper dive next week. But it says mainstream media is now finally focusing on Dr. Fauci, gain of function research, and the possibility that a lab leak started the COVID-19 panic. Writing for Vanity Fair, so Vanity Fair mainstream journalism, Catherine Eben produced a comprehensive report based on 100,000 leaked documents associated with EcoHealth, the nonprofit that was receiving funding from Fauci's NIH to conduct research in Wuhan, China. And the journalist investigates an organization that definitely needs questioning from the mainstream. People like myself and others in the independent media have been talking about this for a while now, saying that, look, there's clear evidence EcoHealth Alliance was involved in funding gain-of-function research under Fauci. And now we're getting more and more emails coming forward, including there's now a EcoHealth Alliance whistleblower. And this is crazy. These are not my words. Dr. Andrew Huff, the former VP of Data and Technology at EcoHealth Alliance, the organization that was doing gain-of-function research in Wuhan, China, has now come forward. And he has submitted a whistleblower complaint to U.S. Senator Roger Wicker, alleging that the EcoHealth Alliance funded the development of SARS-CoV-2 and engaged in fraud against the U.S. government. He also said that he believes the CEO of EcoHealth, Dr. Peter Daszak, has worked with the CIA since at least 2015 and may be a double agent working on behalf of the Chinese government. So just a whole nother plot twist there. And again, I don't see any of the mainstream media reporting on this at all, but I just wanted to get that in there.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big one. Boom.
Read Robert F. Kennedy's book. I would recommend if anyone's interested in Anthony Fauci as a good like history of the things that he's dabbled in. That is like a very extensively researched book called The Real Anthony Fauci.
Yeah, and it covers some of what we just talked about there, EcoHealth Alliance. Like I said, it's been out there in the public sphere. It's just the corporate media and the government been ignoring it. But now it seems like, for one reason or another, we're starting to get some mainstream reports acknowledging this. So before we close with the song, guys, I wanted to play a quick promo for something that, if you guys don't mind, it's only 45 seconds. This is for the next season of my documentary series, The Pyramid of Power, that I think some of our audience might enjoy. It's just 45 seconds. So whether you can hear it or see it, you'll be able to understand. So just check this out real quick. We'll be right back.
In May 2022, The Pyramid of Power returns for season 3. In our first season, we expose the education system, the corporate media, big tech, and Hollywood. In season 2, we went deeper by examining big wireless, the oligarchy, big pharma and the medical cartel, and food as a weapon. For season 3, we will reveal the truth about the prison industrial complex, the foundations, the banking cartel, and the crimes of the intelligence community. To watch season 1 and season 2 of The Pyramid of Power and see the premiere of season 3 in May 2022, visit thepyramidofpower.net.
Wow. Yeah, I just wanted to share that. I just wanted to share that.
I so like that, man.
Yeah, if anybody's interested, go to thepyramidofpower.net. Hold on. What'd you say, Johnny?
Sorry. Thank Greg Harris, who says, we need more whites for justice. I'm not sure what you mean by that, Greg.
All right, any last closing thoughts?
I thought that was awesome. Yeah, go to a show.
Go to a show. Go to the market.
Have a good time. Enjoy life. Love your loved ones. Love yourselves.
Definitely. Yeah, today's episode was called Are You Ready to Be Free?
Smile at your babies.
Go be free. Smile at the babies. Don't make it difficult for them to learn.
Yeah, baby right. Smiles.
Thank you, KPFT.
We're out of here, guys. See you next week.
Here's a short story about a dying hollow.